This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with Jeff Shook, George Costellas, and Dave LaTourette.
Welcome back to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. In today's episode, we go OG style, as in our original format, which is a bunch of dudes just sitting around talking about goalkeeping. In today's episode, we simply talk about what we want conceptually as coaches from a warm-up into a training session, whether that training session is isolated as a goalkeeper or maybe it's a training session that precedes a full team training session, and some of the things that we want to get out of those. So sit down, pull up a chair, and let's get stuck in with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, and Lotto.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We're back with another roundtable, and this one will truly be a roundtable discussion. We're going to talk a little bit about what we want from a warm-up, some of our favorite warm-up exercises, then what we like in a shot-stopping or shooting exercise, and then a kind of a crossing exercise, and just kind of like just bounce around the pluses and minuses, what we were trying to get out of it, what we think we get out of these exercises, and the benefits and things along that line, and then who knows what else. All right, so we'll start off. What do you guys think in terms of getting what you want your players to get out of a warm-up? I'll just throw out that, like, when I was playing at my highest level, all I wanted to do is catch a couple balls and break a sweat. Now, at a younger age, obviously, there was probably more to it. And again, depending on the type of session I was going through, there would be more on it. My big things are breaking a sweat, but then also mentally being prepared. So doing some sort of activity that's going to replicate what will follow up, but we'll just we'll open it up to the wind. And Lotto, you look like you've got a breeze blowing behind you. So
I do. It's awesome.
Yeah.
As fake as it is. I'll give you some context and just think about it. Like I remember when I first started training goalkeepers, I remember, and George was probably, although it might've evolved by that point. I was going to say George might've been a victim of this, and it's not bad, but I would get there and it'd be like serious from the first moment. And I think some days were like that, but it started to evolve. And I feel like sometimes, and it doesn't matter the level, whether it's our youth or our youth transitioning to college, I think there's somewhat of a transition from coming from this social environment or academic environment into the training environment. And I sort of liked it and didn't realize it, but there's a social component that bridges the two gaps with your teammates, with your coaches, and then you sort of get into it. So I thought about one thing, and we've done this just because one of our other coaches has this. It's my assistant, and he brought it. Is have you guys ever seen Spikeball? It just and you don't even have to play the game, but it just bouncing, using the ball, and you can use it. We use a size 3 soccer ball sometimes, and it really just gets everyone to have some fun. It gets them to move. You have to think a little bit. You can create some patterns with it, whatever it is, but it gets the guys going. So for a warm-up like that, I feel like there's just this little bit of integration from off the field to on the field and bridging that gap. So maybe, you know, if coaches, and you can come up with sort of some sort of fun activity whatever it is.
Your timing is impeccable. last night, and I swear this is the truth, on ESPN, they had two doubles. Two guys playing against two guys. And I recognize it because one team was from Ohio University. And they were playing some sort of game on that thing that you have, the little
spike ball,
round circular pad. They had some, and there was a circle, a bigger circle on the ground drawn in line. I don't know what the rules were. I didn't bother.
I think that's maybe out of bounds or whatever it is. But if we ever do a goalkeeper roundtable training camp or camp, I think we get some spike ball gear and we have a tournament. I mean, that would be freaking, we used to talk about stuff we shipped with Soccer Plus. That would have been fun to ship that stuff and have spike
ball. It would have been light and easy. Yeah. And again, I mean, but back to the topic of being warm. Yeah. I mean, obviously you're moving. There's a reaction going on to it. It's got a ball. So that does make sense.
And a lot of people talk about activation, and maybe it's an easy way to do in air quotes, activation for our kids, but activate in a lot of ways to get them prepared. Yeah. So, you know, and if I think about, you know, I'm going to make a lot of reference to a session I did the other night with our goalkeepers. And the first thing I did, and I think about the warm-up is as coaches, if we're working within the team environment, for me, it was Lee, John, what are you guys doing for training sessions? So I had two groups of goalkeepers from a U18 and a U16 group. And they each were doing some sort of system of play into crossing, into pattern runs, into finishing. So for me, we don't get a chance to do it a lot, mainly because of the way things have been structured here in California is, you know, basically I take it back to the warm-up. I'm like, I'm going to start with jumping and we're going to start dealing with crosses, you know, then they can integrate into the game. So for me, the warm-up was basic. We started with some basic technical footwork, lateral footwork. It wasn't full speed, but it was technically very proficient. And after every movement, there essentially was a catching exercise or a one touch with the feet or a two touch. So example, eight, we did everything off of a row of cones of eight, a stride apart. One person serving, one person essentially working, but the person serving, the focus was also, hey, you're not just serving, you're working on striking a ball. And I think that's important for us as goalkeeping people to, if we have one goalkeeper that's serving, we make it purposeful for them. So it simply started with some lateral movements with a catch, lateral movements with a one touch, lateral movements received with a two touch, and you can format it any way you want. And then I progressed that into five exercises of what I would refer to as low level plyometrics. So we're not jumping for height. We're not jumping off a box. There were five exercises, 2-footed jump forward, 2-footed jump sideways, jumping forward on the left foot, on the right foot. And then I refer to it as like they're skaters. Essentially you're bounding side to side, and everything was done over a series of 8 cones. So it was essentially 8 jumps with 2 feet going forward. They would backpedal, and then restart with a catch in between. And the purpose of it was not jumping for height, but getting them into this program of plyometrics. So it was how quick their feet essentially get off the ground. So Billy would refer to it, he understands the rate of force development. So it's on and off the ground really quick. And I think it's really important for us as goalkeepers, feet stay close to the ground so that we can make quick movements. You know, when I added it up at the end of the session, just the little plyometric, they went through 5 sets of each exercise. You know, essentially you do the math, 8 times 5 is 40 times 5 is what, 200. So they were well over 200 jumps by the time they got out of the warmup. And that was essentially the first part of our warmup before I went into a bigger exercise.
Cool. Good. Jeff, what you got?
You know, for me, a lot of it comes down to understanding the environment that I'm going into, whether I'm going to be goalkeeper trainer on the day versus goalkeeping coach. And with the trainer environment where you've got far more goalkeepers, a lot of it's being organized to deal with those kind of numbers to get our objectives across. And then when it comes down to being the coach, it's about knowing the player, having a mental engagement with them to see where they're at going into the training session, to see if they're prepared to go through what the head coach, myself, and the team is trying to accomplish on the day. So it's some level of mental engagement to let me connect with them so they know what the objectives will be. And then with the bigger group, having them understand what our objectives are going to be over the course of the next hour or hour and a half.
Cool. Good. George, you want to throw something in?
No, I just think what's really important, and you know, Lotto brought it up, and you know, Jeff said, you know, knowing your environment and knowing your clientele, and you know, I'll just use the professional environment at the USL that I was privy to. You know, one, you know, those guys are going to come out there with the purpose of getting ready. So there's always some type of latitude where it's just like, all right, fellas, do what you need to start with. But then once we do get integrated into our environment, what you'll find is what I like about what Lotto says, some type of enjoyment, something that's competitive. And I know for those guys, utilizing their feet and playing a little bit of a two-touch rondo in the air. And again, it's competitive. They're working with their feet. They're working on their touch, but at the same time, it's putting a smile on their face. And then we transition and get to work. So I always think that's also essential. when you're looking at a warm-up, that, you know, you're coming out of there, yes, you're warm, but guess what? You got a smile on your face as well. And I think that's just a great way to approach a training session.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would, and again, I just like being simple. And so I'm probably going to be, I don't know, a little, hopefully functional, but a little less structured, maybe, and trying to kind of bring together all the things you talked about, all you guys, because they're all good points. I would do always the thing, and again, I think you guys probably have seen me do this, Lotto and George, maybe, it's just, you know, the keeper's standing in the goal, they roll me the ball, they follow it out on a sprint, and I'm going to one-touch it back at them from like 12, 15 yards out. So they're moving forward as we want them in the game. I'd have them going central. Then again, they're starting at one post. They're going to roll me the ball, and they've got to get to the ball line. Mm-hmm. So they're rolling. I'm central. They're rolling it from here. They've got to come across end out and just then go to the next post. And I think things like that, where there's that kind of movement, kind of the movement that you described, Lotto, but it's very, very functional. There's handling. I would do that. I would do like four cones, 8 yards apart, and they're just going to have to circle through the cones. And then I have a ball. And as soon as I push the ball, I'm going to strike it. It's 8 yards apart, so this is actually a goal width. And so if they're here, they have to come out and defend the goal. If they're here and I touch the ball, they come out and defend the goal. So again, it's just a lot of reading the ball and a lot of movement that pertains to, you know, the type of movements that go on in the game. I think these are all good points. Lotto, you want to add to this?
Yeah, just, I think you make a really good point. It makes me think of Shooky and George as well. And I think when we contextualize this, some of this is fractioned off of how much time we have. Like Jeff said, are we in coach mode? Are we in trainer mode? Do we have an hour? Do we have 20 minutes? And sometimes it's like, okay, I got 20 minutes and I've got to get these guys ready for a crossing exercise, a shooting exercise, a functional buildup exercise, whatever it is. And I think that's important to understand that. And the other thing from a coaching perspective, and I've tried to do this over the years in certain teams and certain players and certain goalkeepers pick up on it better than others, is as a coach, when you get there, your attitude sort of is contagious. And when I say that too, how we use our voice and how the intonations and the things that we use, for instance, when I get there, I try to make it a little bit more lighthearted and my tempo is a little slower, but then my voice comes up a little bit and my intensity comes up a little bit. And my hope is that my players or my goalkeepers follow that pattern. Some are good at it. Some teams I have to pull and say, listen, can you guys hear me change my voice and change the tempo of how I feel about it? Some kids are like, yeah, but those are the same kids that inherently follow that voice. And some players aren't used to that because it's the same. They're used to a monotone voice from the start of training to the end of training without any sort of urgency to it. So I think as a way for us to set tones and set tempos with training, we can do that with our voice and our actions as well.
Yeah. And I think that setting that tone and tempo is going to be dependent upon what the content of the session is going to be. This is going to be a session where, you know what, you're going to see a ball and then you're going to have to play. There's going to be gameplay. So you're not going to face, you know, a multitude of shots in a brief amount of time. Maybe then the your tone and your exercises might be a little bit different. You might be a little bit more thinking and want to emphasize a little bit more thought in one and a little bit more reaction and, you know, up down stuff in another. Good. Any other thoughts for providing for a warm up for Jeff? Yeah.
And then like one of my non-negotiables in a warm up is we will do ball striking. They need to be prepared to play balls with their feet. Because just myself, this is my opinion, I don't want to be striking balls during the session that I'm facilitating. I want to be able to be an observer and an evaluator. And if I have to strike balls, I can't do those to the fullest of my potential. So I want the goalkeepers to be dialed in with their ball striking, as that's going to determine the quality of their partner's session. If you can't hit a quality ball at me, George, I can't get any better. If I can't hit a quality ball at you, you can't get any better. So we have to bring that level up as well as the goalkeeping handling part of it.
Good. George.
I love what you're talking about, Jeff, because, just recently, started to get back into the collegiate environment at my alma mater at University of Hartford. And I have three guys, exceptional attitude and approach. And we were just talking about how in our training environment that one, you know, you shoot what you aim for. So we're looking, we're going to set the bar high, and we're going to have high expectations. So our standards are high. So that means the quality's got to be high. So we talked about just that point in itself that, hey, every rep matters in regards to you guys getting better. So we got to take ownership in this environment, because if you're striking the ball well, obviously what I'm really looking for is, one, getting them a number of repetitions with their feet, but also a number of repetitions with their hands. And for me, what I'm talking about there is that, one, okay, we're looking to train hard, train with quality, train with focus. And for me, when you can set that standard and create that environment and that buy-in right away, it's going to translate throughout the whole session. So I'd like to see it immediately in that warm-up.
I think your point's well taken, George. I think one of the things in all the different, you know, points people have made is that at some point you're saying this is the standard, okay? And we may be doing, you know, a different kind of exercise. You know, each of us could be doing different exercises, but I expect it to be this good. We're not going to go out here just, knock a ball back and forth for a little bit. Going back to my high school days, I mean, to be honest, we played soccer golf for our warm-up because they just told us, we need you in like 15 minutes. We played soccer golf. We didn't know any better. We're kids. We had no coaches. So we just did that. But now as I have gotten better and more advanced in my thinking, you're going to do something and you're going to do it well. And I think that transfers from warm-up to exercise to game. And so I think that's something that I think will be consistent among us. Go ahead, George.
Well, I just wanted to kind of just bring up the fact that by conveying those points to those goalkeepers, what I've loved about is they're not just hearing it from me. So if a ball is mishit or misplayed, I love the fact that they're actually telling each other, like, hey, man, come on, Billy, make sure you get it at me. So, again, coming from me, it's a little bit different. But when you're getting it from your own training partners and your goalkeepers, now you know you're being, I want to say so much called out, but you are being called out by your teammate, and that's going to resonate more. So I love the fact that it's getting everybody on the same page.
Simple peer pressure.
Pressure. I think, Lotto, you just said pressure, the word pressure. Yeah, I tell you what, you know, I don't mind pressure. I want to put pressure on the kids. And I'll tell that to anybody. Yeah, I'm going to put pressure on you because that's the expectation. I want you to be able to deal with pressure. And if I don't put pressure on you, how are you ever going to be able to deal with it? And so the pressure of those expectations that you mentioned, George, I think are important for kids to feel. It's like, okay, yeah. And again, you know, I understand the logic when people say, yeah, but we want it to be, you know, not a high pressure environment. Well, you know what? I want a high pressure environment. I'm a goalkeeper. I want a high pressure environment. Okay. And so I think, I think that we need to make sure the kids understand that. And don't view pressure as this evil, you know, force that, you know, crushes our performance, but rather this is a force that raises my performance. And without pressure, I'm not going to be as good. My best games were the toughest games when I was under the most pressure. And so I've just learned that, this pressure stuff isn't necessarily bad. Now, again, it has to be done judiciously. And I can't just throw an open blank check to people to say, put your kids under a million pounds of pressure. No, it has to be administered in a thoughtful and beneficial way to the athlete. And I think
and Anson touched on this when he talked values, but as a group, as a whole, and that doesn't mean if you're a coach with three goalkeepers or you're within a group of 20 or 15 or 25 players, but that pressure to hold each other from a peer standpoint to a higher standard, you know, everyone talks culture all they want. You can talk it all you want, but that's culture. I mean, that is culture when, you know, your center back holds your goalkeeper to a higher standard and vice versa, and all the way up the spine and to your coaching staff, whatever that is. But if everyone else is on that same page and we all put a little bit of pressure on each other in a positive way, that's in my mind, that's that has culture values written all over it.
Good. Now, these have been very good points about a warm-up and things for coaches to consider when they're designing their own warm-up. for their own goalkeepers. Because again, each coach will know their goalkeeper better than we do. And so developing these values, incorporating these values, these ideas into their warm-up, hopefully benefits you, all right? So let's get to some activities. Let's talk shot stopping, okay? Let's talk a training exercise that you have used that you felt was very beneficial. And then it probably would help if you gave us kind of like the idea of, you know, what level you were using this at, when you were using this at, you know, this exercise, to give us a little bit more background perhaps into the applicability that maybe somebody would want to try this. So I can go if you guys want, or if you guys got something in mind. Jeff, go ahead. First one with a hand up. Go ahead.
I'll use one that we were able to use this morning to give us a little bit of background. We had both of our UWS keepers out, and we only had two goalkeepers. So we tried to survey them before where they felt they were seeing the highest quantity of shots and where those shots were coming from and where they were getting scored on. So they had identified inside the 18 and inside the 6-yard box. So I just got into a little activity where I would bounce the ball back and forth with one of the goalkeepers who was about 15, 16 yards out from goal and back to goal. And whenever she chose to, she could take her next touch, cut it across her body, away from her body. And then on the next touch from there, have the shot from our goalkeeper or towards our goalkeeper. So our goalkeeper in the goals having to come forward, go backwards based on the ball coming in and back from me and the player, and then adjust to the angle, find her ball line, and then determine how far out she was going to have to come to close space, or if she was going to sit back and try to shot stop if the shot or the touch took her real wide from goal. So we try to bring in the highest level of realism. So the distance from the goalkeeper, the number of touches, and the position on the field where they're facing those shots. Trying to keep our set somewhere between 6 and 8 quality, and then rotating our keepers in and out so we didn't overwork them.
No, I like that, Jeff. I like a lot of things about that. I like the movement. The keeper's got to track the ball and has to move, and there's an infinite number of spots where the ball could go, an infinite number of touches that the player could take. And the goalkeeper has to respond accordingly. No, I like that. A lot of movement and there's a lot of handling.
Ball's building up, so it's not like they're just sitting and waiting for this touch to engage them. So as that ball's coming into that player back to goal, they're getting a little bit closer. As that ball drops back to me, they're back setting underneath the threat that I might shoot a ball. So they're constantly engaged. And once we give them a quality number, we'll get them out of there, and then we'll try to get them through 2 or 3 quality sets and move on.
Good. Lara, did you have something? I thought I saw your hand. Or were you just combing your hair?
I think I was coughing. Okay. The one thing I like, and without even just maybe not getting into it so much a shooting exercise, but once we get out of our warm-up, hopefully we've developed, you know, if we're doing a shot handling, we've done some stuff in warm-up where obviously they're handling a ball in that realm, and they've started to develop some confidence. And Billy, you talk about it all the time. They've developed rhythm. So they've developed rhythm. They've developed some confidence. They're already handling the ball. And for me, what I really like about Jeff is the movement, that when they get in the goal, they're not doing the same thing that they were doing in their warm-up, but except now that there's a big goal behind them. That now that they're moving, whether I always liked moving, starting on the post, doing an exercise where they start off the post and then maybe slide laterally 1 or 2 steps, but they're moving based on the movement of a ball. And we talked about not hitting dead balls previously in some of our discussions. So either it's off of the movement of the person striking, it's a 2-touch ball, it's a touch and then a strike. So they slide off the post, they close the ball, they get themselves in a good shape, and then they respond. So, and gradually move it so that their angles become, or the distances that they have to cover from left to right become bigger. So they move from maybe from the post, then the next angle, they're a little bit more central, then the final angle, they're central, whatever it is, but whatever the movement is, they're always dealing with a moving ball from different distances and different paces. So I don't think there's any magic science there, but the movement, and the reality is not only the movement, reading the rhythm of the ball that's being struck. Is it being hit off of a half volley? Is it being hit off the ground? And how do you handle that differently?
Good. I'm going to throw out one because, again, Laura, you mentioned the word rhythm, and I'm loving the goalkeeper's rhythm. And I probably change it from where I originally did this, but I used to call what we called rhythm shooting, which is that was my name for it. We had 13 balls around the top of the 18, probably around the top of the D. And the reserve goalkeeper would just roll them laterally 3 yards, 5 yards, maybe a little bit forward, maybe a little bit back. And I would run onto it and smack it at goal. And we had a cone. Initially, we started with a cone about 2 yards, maybe a yard off the line. The goalkeeper had to go back to that after each shot. And as soon as I struck that ball, I'm backing up and they're serving another ball. And we probably do 13 balls straight with no stop. So it was a great workout for me. I'll be dripping at the end of it. But the idea was for this goalkeeper to develop, number one, reading my rhythm and adapting their rhythm to it. So some of those balls, they're going to take 3 or 4 strides. Some of those balls, they may only get 2 strides. Where is that ball? Sometimes the kid would roll it a little bit farther wide. Sometimes they roll a little bit more forward. So again, adopting and reading that rhythm of mine to that ball. So they're identifying, okay, this is how the shooter's running at it. If I'm sprinting at it, they've got to move quicker. If I'm catching my breath and I'm a little bit slower, they'd have to move slower to time themselves to get them there. They'd be at a different spot. And the one thing with this is that these were college goalkeepers that were pretty sound technically. And the emphasis was on getting the rhythm. However, if there was footworking problems or things like that, I'd have to try and read that. And I got so I could strike these balls, but also I'd be watching them just to the absolute last split second. Having heard from you guys, I think I probably would change this exercise to have the, I would need another goalkeeper. I only had 2 at the time, but I'd need another goalkeeper, or I would serve the balls. I would just roll the balls out. So I could observe the goalkeeper maybe a little bit better. I feel like I did a good job, but obviously that one goalkeeper is just rolling balls out as opposed to striking it themselves. But I think the things from this that are beneficial are the number of repetitions. Additionally, what I found as I would do this more and more is the goalkeeper can't dwell on it. It's like, if I beat you to the lower left, you can't sit there and go, oh man, I got beat. No, because you know what? I'm going to beat you to the lower left again. And I would hit.
Goalkeeper amnesia.
Yeah, selective forgetting. It's called selective forgetting. And so you would just pound them. Now you can't give, okay, I'll throw more terminology out there. You can only provide summary feedback, not concurrent feedback or faded feedback. Only summary. At the end of the session, I talk then. After the end of the 13 balls, here's what happened. And so, yeah, okay, yeah. So they fix it for the next round. And we do like maybe 3 or 4 rounds. And that doesn't take that long, but it was very effective. And the feedback I got from the goalkeepers in terms of how effective was that, they liked it. It's a lot of action, a lot of shots, and they can respond appropriately. George, you're going to say something?
Well, no. And the only thing that I was going to go to was, I know that sometimes, obviously, after the warm up, probably going to do another activity with the goalkeeper coach. But as we're all well aware, sometimes you only get that 20, 25 minutes, and then you're integrated into that team environment. And actually, one of the functional team environments that I use a lot, because it's shot handling, but it's very functional, is let's just say you have 18 guys, 2 being keepers. So the 2 keepers go in goal. The field size is about 36, maybe 40 yards long. The width of the 44, and you put the 4 groups by each post. You start balls on one side of the goal, and then you put another set of balls in the other. So you're really splitting the field vertically. So now you're getting economical training. And what you do is you train just some functional play. And what I like is you can do one player checks off into the field, and then you do an up and a back. So now you're getting players working with each other. And now the goalkeeper has to read in regards to the situation. So you work on up, back, you can do wall passes, you can do touches to the inside, touches to the outside. So now you're not only just seeing things from a straight vantage point, you're seeing shots from distance, you're seeing shots from within the penalty area, you're seeing shots from out wide, you're seeing shots with left foot, right foot. And to me, when you can keep it that functional and you're actually doing some interpassing with the field players, one, I think once you integrate the field players, you know it's going to be very competitive. And obviously, if you're splitting those groups in half, you make it a competition. So now you got one goalkeeper versus the other goalkeeper. You got two teams that are established. So it's highly competitive. You're getting a tremendous amount of reps. You're getting functional movement. And again, and I think what you're getting is you're working on rhythm. It's always a moving ball. So now, yeah, not only are you focusing on how to set, more importantly, you're focusing on when to set. And obviously, if you can get some more goalkeepers, I mean, if you had four goalkeepers, obviously, but it gives a little bit of rest too, as much as it's continuous. Obviously, the goalkeeper, because they have to pass the ball and it gives them some natural rest in between. So again, a functional environment with high repetitions and a lot of work.
Good. Yeah. A lot of movement. Lotto. You're muted.
You're just not able to speak anymore. As you were talking about your session builder, it reminded me of an exercise that I still do, and I've evolved it a little bit. And it's funny, you say you used, 13 balls, but we used 8 to 10, sort of dependent on what we could steal from the field players.
Exactly.
Right. So, yeah. So it was, and this was more in a team environment, and where I'm actually striking, where I would do this exercise, I would want to strike these balls. So on the goalkeepers, if we had two or three, it didn't really matter. But what we would have is however many balls you'd have. If we had two goalkeepers, one goalkeeper's in the goal, one goalkeeper's on the post, and that goalkeeper has the ball. So the ball always starts with the goalkeeper on the post, tosses it into the goalkeeper in the center, who receives it, and he serves it to me, and I'm somewhere in the D. I'm on the left side of it, right side of it, middle of it, doesn't matter. He can play a ball, and we talk distribution. It's got to be good distribution. So distribute it to my foot, right or left, doesn't matter, on the ground, or he can sling throw it into my hand. So, they have two choices. And one thing I think about this now is my male goalkeepers tend to be able to sling throw reasonably well, and my female goalkeepers struggle. So if in that environment, I might force my female goalkeepers that struggle to throw a little bit more just from a strength component, that they have to sling throw everything. So if a ball comes into my foot, they're essentially following that ball. They know that I'm gonna touch it to touch, and then I'm gonna drive it, essentially drive it on goal or shape it on goal from a ball on the ground. So their decision making in terms of distribution and then having to close that ball and deal with that shot is different than if they sling throw it, then they know it's coming out of my hands. It's either coming off a half volley or it's coming off a volley. And hopefully by then they can even read the difference between me catching a ball. And I like to, when I hit a half volley, I'll put a little backspin off of two hands and they read that. And if I hit a volley, I'm dropping it out of one hand, whether it's in my right hand or my left hand. And they should be able to pick up on those rhythms. So this goes back to your rhythm, Bill, but it also forces them to start reading ball on the ground, touch to his left foot, which is his weak foot, touch to his right foot, which is his strong foot. Volley, half volley, whatever it is. So it's a simple exercise, and I know you like simple, and I do as well, but it can get as complex as you want to make it.
Yeah, I think the idea of having the volley is good because that's a totally different positioning, totally different ideas in terms of their positioning. If that's going to be volleyed, I'm going to hold a little bit more, versus if it's on the floor, yeah, you know what, I'm going to steal as much as I can. Cool, good. All right, breakaways. A breakaway exercise and the rationale and the audience for a breakaway exercise. Anybody want to go? I'll go if nobody wants to go, man.
I'm just going to start. I'm not going to give you an exercise, but I'm going to give you this. We talked about in our podcast with Tracy Noonan, especially, and a couple others. I believe, David Winter had talked about being courageous with your hands. Mm-hmm. And sorry about to have my COVID cough. that we have lost the skill, and I've over the last week or 10 days, I've watched a little bit of ACC men's, ACC women's, and SEC women's, which mainly those are some of the only people that are even playing right now. as we're taping this. But one of the best goalkeepers I've seen be courageous is the women's goalkeeper at South Carolina. She made a save last night that I haven't seen a goalkeeper in college make. Reads a big touch, comes strong for a 50-50 ball, and essentially smothers it, where almost every goalkeeper I've seen lately at that level is holding their ground, waiting for something to happen, coming out, trying to K-save a ball or whatever it is. And I just thought the way that she was patient, because she had a defender chasing, the ball got touched in front of the defender, it was a big touch, and then she closed it down. So I thought the decision-making was fantastic. I forget her name, but Shelly and Jamie Smith down there, and I think Jamie probably still coaches the goalkeepers. Really impressed with her, and she's not big either. In fact, maybe 5'6". Super athletic, really good decision making, great footwork in terms of moving her feet. So I just that process of making decisions in breakaways is one of the skills that we have to get better at teaching again. I think we used to teach it well, and I don't know how well we're doing that now.
Yeah, again, we've beaten the K-save to death in terms of discussions, but I think that's still a point worth considering, especially in the training. I would love this exercise. We call it flying 2v1s, because basically it's 2v1 at goal. So there's a lot of liveliness. And this is, I'm going to use field players as tools. Field players use us as tools often enough, so I'm just going to reverse it. And you have players on each post. They come in against one defender. The player that touches the ball last, and you've got two goals 36 yards apart. The player that touches the ball last before it goes over that in line has to get off. They're the one that stays and defends. The other player has to get off. And now two players come at him from the other post. And whoever touches the ball last, if the player in the middle wins it, the one wins it, they can go straight to goal. They don't need to wait. And what that happens is involves kind of the things you're talking about, Lara. A lot of the things you're talking about, because it's 2v1. Obviously, as the defender steps to the one of the two, that player then can slide the ball off. And that goalkeeper has to read the likelihood of that. Yeah, you know what? That ball's on the wrong side. They can't pass it across. Or that ball's on the side in the middle. So, yeah, now I can see them playing that ball, and they have to read it and get out. And hopefully we would see a lot of what you just described, that smothering. Again, field players love it because it's a lot of going to goal in a numbers-up situation. But we're forcing the decision-making, and we're forcing the whole myriad of multiple positions and you know, interception points, whatever you want to call it, of the ball. So I think something like that's very active is enjoyable, and they get a ton of reps. And so within those reps, obviously at first I was thinking all technique, but I think the biggest thing for me after a while was the decision-making. They just become much better decision makers in terms of, yes, I can win that ball. Oh, the defender's going to recover. Oh, no, what? I can get a couple of steps and I got a hole because they might be striking that ball. So that just that decision-making, you know, the repetitions, we tend to think of repetitions in terms of our exercises, in terms of technique and physicality, but how many decisions does your goalkeeper get to make? And that's going to improve their decision-making, obviously. So
what I love about that activity, Billy, is one, obviously very realistic and, extremely high tempo. And I think what fails to be coached sometime is that with breakaways, as much as you need to be courageous and there needs to be that level of aggression, there needs to be patience, patience in regards to keeping your shape and not committing too early or spreading. But also what I love about that, the variation that you can go off of that is that can also evolve into 3v2s. You know what I mean? So where, you can just manipulate that variation, but as you're well aware, those situations where your number's up and number's down is where you're going to have to create it creates that scenario where, is it going to be a through ball? Am I going to adjust? They have to make the adjustment in their starting position. But also that level of anticipation, that ability to be like, what happens if my player gets beat, or what happens if that ball is played through, which I always kind of, label the what ifs. Being a goalkeeper, we have to be pessimistic and understanding that a player might dive in, and when they do dive in, am I in a good enough spot to be able to make the next play?
So, well, I think, George, to build on your point, I think, you know, not just what is, but reading the shape of the player on the ball, mm-hmm. the way their hips are, the way the ball is, they're not going to play a through ball. Oh, the way their hips are, the way the ball is, now they are going to play that through ball. That's a distinct possibility now.
Yep.
Being able to read all these different visual cues as to what's a probability, kind of like what you're saying, what's the odds of something happening? Mm-hmm. And being able to read those cues. I think that's the more often kids can see these situations and see those cues, they'll start to pick it up without even knowing they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good point, man. I think you're on with that.
We've referenced before, and George said the anticipation, and mentally anticipating is the first step, but physically, and not theoretically, but physically being on the front foot, meaning if the ball is being played forward and you're in a potential breakaway situation, and I referred to the South Carolina game. They were playing Arkansas last night as we record this. And the player took a couple big touches. And in that moment, you knew that she wasn't going to shoot from the place that she was on the field, where defensive pressure was coming from, the speed the ball and the player was moving. So in that environment, physically being on the front foot, and Bill, you referenced how you and Tony have had this discussion at one point. Is that no, physically you are in like a quote, a sprinter stance where weight is on the front foot and you are just, it's a staggered step. You're not square, because to go, you're going to have to go staggered before you go sprint. So why not put yourself in that staggered step, weight on the front foot? So you're already mentally one step ahead and physically another step ahead.
Yeah. If they can strike it, I'm here. If they can't say kind of the touches you're talking about, I'm like this, or I'm like this. So, cool, good.
A lot of this with the breakaways with me is starting to understand the trends in the current game. I hate to use the modern game because it's just a current game right now. And I think a lot of us, the four of us, played behind teams that deployed a sweeper or even the possibility of an offside trap. And we dealt with breakaways that started far further from the goal.
Absolutely.
Now, when you start to look at teams playing flat or playing with three center backs, balls are getting slipped in from a far closer distance. And George used the word patience. I like to use the word restraint. There has to be some level of restraint of why would I come out so early and engage and take myself away from using my hands, my number one tool, before that player's even engaged me inside the box. So it's putting the goalkeepers in a realistic position from realistic starting positions that they and their team would face in their current setting.
Personally, for me, Jeff, one thing that maybe I have seen more of it. Maybe, again, when how well we're educating and teaching goalkeepers to read the breakaway save is a ball that does get played through regardless of distance, but there's defensive pressure, let's say on the hip of the potential striker or the ball that's being played to that person. And that ball is not coming straight at you. Let's say it's either going on an angle, maybe just outside the post on an angle of the 18. And in my view, I don't want my goalkeeper to go. I don't want him to go in that situation. If there's defensive pressure there that's taking it even slightly away from the goal, yes, maybe the goalkeeper closes ground and closes the angle, but I'm seeing goalkeepers come in that situation and the striker's thinking, oh, this is sweet. I don't have quite 100% pressure that I'm going to get tackled. The goalkeeper's out of position and moving, so I'm just going to slot it. So I think, you know, when we go, we have to be committed to win the ball.
Good. George.
No, I just love those functional environments. And again, I'm a big believer in what Jeff was saying. And when I'm coaching, I want to be able to have the perspective of the goalkeeper. And what Lotto's talking about is, you know, when there is good pressure, are they adjusting their vertical positioning? You know, are they now getting a little bit higher up and taking a little bit more ground? So, and again, for me, what I'm thinking there as a goalkeeper is, all right, so now if my defender does happen to get beat off the dribble, or in the case where they do try to take him off that dribble, if the ball comes free, now I can get to it quickly. And I'm not allowing that attacker to get there again because they just lost it the first time. So again, I want to be able to see the positioning, the goalkeeper, kind of get an idea of what they're thinking in those moments. So I think the ability to read those cues are so essential in regards to the success of the goalkeeper, because a lot of the times you're not seeing it at the youth level, those micro adjustments that we've talked about earlier in our podcasts.
Yeah. Cool. Good. These are really good information, I think, for coaches to be aware of, because again, we all are sharing over our experiences and our thoughts regarding the training and dealing with these situations. Let's move to crosses. Is there an exercise? And again, I'm open to just saying, okay, here's an exercise that may work along with the points that you're trying to make and the points that you're trying to train and develop with your goalkeepers. So for crosses, is there something, some special exercise you've done that you felt was very beneficial for your kids? Lotto, go ahead.
Got your hand up. I'm going to go, and it's not special. It's very situational. And, you know, I started with our goalkeepers the other night. We talked about our warm-up, and I knew we were going to get into a situation where it was going to be the focus for, they were going to get into their team, and it was going to be crossing from different wide settings. And they're going to end up dealing with some shooting, but I really wanted the focus to be on positional or starting position, reading the cross, attacking a cross, and then distribution if they happen to catch a cross. And then the shooting was going to be a secondary part of it. So when we went from doing our warm-up to our functional plyometric stuff into goal, I broke it down into three tiers. And balls were being struck from goalkeepers, one goalkeeper on one side of the 18, one on the other, from wide positions. And it was just what I referred to as a simple flighted ball, which means it's not driven, just dropped into the six, dropped near the PK. And the whole premise there was A, develop confidence, give them balls that they could handle and develop confidence, work on their starting position. And every ball that was played had to be hit was moving. So it had to be touched into a position and then played. And what I was looking for there is the goalkeeper's starting position, and then how they adjusted to that touch being taken, and then how they approached and attacked the ball. Were they leaving late? Were they leaving early? And funny, we were at training at night at a new field, and the lights there are good, but they're horrible. They're low. And in that end, at end of the field we were working at, when you looked up to receive a cross, it was blinding. Like you almost couldn't see a ball. You had to put a, you know, your hand over the light so you could see the ball sort of kind of come through that part of the flight. And a couple of the kids started complaining a little bit. I said, listen, you're going to get put in this environment at some point, sun, light, whatever it is, you've got to deal with it. So let's adapt to it. Let's adjust it. I go, if I was playing and I was the coach, I would have a little area on my field. I'd be like going, I want to cross from that position as much as we can, because this goalkeeper can't deal with it. But anyway, so it was simple crosses and, you know, and however many, we had two goalkeepers in goal, two goalkeepers serving. So it was functional for all of them. And my message to the wide players was, hey, think about this as you're trying to hit a ball over your back line and drop it into your 7 or your 11. And that kind of worked for them in their brain perfectly. So simple crosses. And then the next level was ball was a little bit tighter to the 18. And now the ball is more driven. So now we're driving a ball into the 6, driving a ball into the PK. And the whole idea there was that it was a lower ball. And I wanted them, that if it was low, that they attacked everything. Time your approach, that you never waited for a single ball, and that you attacked through everything. Even if it was one step, hands early, save through the ball enough that if a striker is coming, that one step is enough that you beat the striker to the ball. And then the third part of that progression was balls inside the 18. And now it was what we have referred to in our Soccer Plus days as a three goal situation. The ball that we like as coaches that draws a goalkeeper to the near post. So we started from inside the 18, ball gets touched, goalkeeper starts on the post, and they have to adjust to that first touch, be set. First priority, obviously, is don't get scored on. Don't get beat near post. And then the idea with that, we were just working on the timing of it and the concept, because with some of those goalkeepers, we haven't worked on it a lot. And the idea with the ball is being hit in from our other goalkeepers that we're serving was that hit a touch and drive it between, I put a cone out at about 5 yards. I want you to hit it and drive it between that cone and the near post. And then I was just asking our goalkeeper to deal with it. But for me, in a coaching perspective, all I was looking at was starting position, how they adjusted to the first touch, and then their set shape, and then their decision-making. You know, how did they make the decision? What did they go for? What did they not go for? And then trying to help them figure out that situation. So really wide, simple flighted balls, wide driven balls, and then balls inside the 18 where you're compromised at your near post.
Cool, good. Somebody else got something. Jeff, for you?
Yeah. Thank you. Things I like to add into my wide play sessions with our goalkeepers, and I know Dave just touched on this, but is making sure that we deal with crosses in the sun and in the wind. And they will complain. Can I take it from that side? It's a little bit easier over there. But the reality of the matter is that's when you're tested in games. How often as a head coach have you said to your team, hey, the sun's right here at this level. Let's make sure we get the ball out wide and deliver balls in while their vision's compromised. And if you haven't put your goalkeeper to the test in training, you've limited their chances of success in the game. So I think making sure that we do our crossing sessions in the sun and in the wind is a must. I like to add in I have a bunch of blow up mannequins that we use to congest the space so that they're having to navigate traffic to simulate what they would get in a game. And then the other one for me is moving balls so that they're having to do a little bit of pre-work and to read when that ball is going to be served and what type of ball it's going to be, and making sure that we're not just delivering balls from what in essence would be a corner kick, making sure there's late service, early service, and then those balls that come in from very, very steep angles that if you do make a mistake, they might float over your head directly into a goal. So making sure that they're dealing with balls delivered from a variety of angles and always moving.
I just, excuse me, but both Lano and Jeff, you guys mentioned the sun, and I just can't help. I was talking with somebody the other day, and at the old Fetcher Field at Carolina, there's behind one goal is Carmichael Dorm. And we knew that around 7 o'clock, the sun was just going down behind Carmichael Dorm. And you didn't want to be defending the far goal at 7 o'clock because the sun was right in the goalkeeper's eyes. So every time we play on a Friday night, well, what time? Kicking off at 7. Okay, we're defending this at first. And sorry, you guys are down there. Live with it. And then after 7:30, the sun's behind the dorm. And it's like, cool, what are you complaining about? The sun is great.
Our home field is structured the same way, Billy, although we have a new field, so it's going to be a moot point. But if we almost the entire season, if we win the toss, we were taking a particular side because we knew in the second half to the point it was absolutely blinding right in your face. And it was brutal. I know Georgie's got something, but
home field, man. George, go ahead, man.
I was just going to touch on the fact that when I was with the Hartford Athletic, we had access to, the blow up dummies, or we would put some type of apparatus just to create a little bit more pressure. And again, that was, in that environment, it's still uncontested, but at least they were obstacles and made them have to make some quicker decisions. But what I truly appreciate I would say, just utilizing that final third and just getting some functional patterns going towards goal. And the reason why is I like the tempo and the ball movement, the inner passing. And when the ball does go wide, it can be inside the penalty area or outside the penalty area. So now you really get to assess the positioning of the goalkeeper. You know, are they in their front third? Are they in the middle third? Are they positioning themselves in the back third? And again, the whole, those minor adjustments that are so essential in regards to increasing the goalkeeper's ability to get the crosses and increasing their range. So that functional flank play to me is what I really believe is a great environment. But once again, you incorporate those field players, it's also competitive. And You know, that's where, you know, you know you're going to see a quality ball zipped in, left foot, right foot. So creating that type of functional environment for the goalkeeper is, to me, I would say most appropriate.
Yeah, these are all really good ideas. I think I would say kind of like two things maybe. First off, I just want my goalkeepers to see a million crosses. Mm-hmm. So the fact that if they just get repetition, and we would, when I'm training college goalkeepers, there's going to be days when, like, you know what, we're going to spend 20 minutes where we're going to do nothing but cross. And I'm going to cross balls in from one side. We've got somebody on the other side crossing balls in from that side. And somebody mentioned this a while back, but I would always make sure the one advantage to having three people doing this, you got the kid in goal, and then you got a person on each side, is that if I'm on the right, I'm going to be serving in balls. When you receive that ball, you've got to play it out to the person on the other side. So that they immediately, they just become conditioned. If I get a ball from this side, the first thing I do is I look to the opposite side. And that kind of conditioning, in addition to just the sheer number of repetitions they need to see to be able to judge a ball.
Billy, that was, awareness. I should have added that because that was, and I'd mentioned it, but it was the final component to that crossing exercises that I did, was that it's not just good enough to make the decision, come for a ball, clear a ball, but serve a ball, or, you know, in that exercise, it was a simple distribution to the player on the other side of the box. But it wasn't just good enough to get it there. I had the player that was on the other side of the box who would be serving next, just make a simple movement, either drop back towards the end line, step a little higher, and for that goalkeeper to have to shape a ball into their feet where they were showing that they wanted it. So it's making can be a simple exercise more complex because now they're starting to put the pieces to that together.
Cool. The only thing I was going to add in addition to this is, you guys have touched upon several good points. And the thing I would kind of adjust as these same points is I would do a lot of just an 18 and then an 18 on top of that. So 36 yards, the width of the penalty area, I'd have an early crosser, and they were restricted. They played higher than the 18, and they were crossing at the far goal. So they were like what I call an early cross, and just 3v3. And as I would do this with kids, initially you're training them just to be able to get the ball in traffic, but then you start to develop that ability. Now you have to work with your defenders. Step, drop, okay, hold. So the communication aspect came in. And I think after that, we would then reverse it and now do a late cross where the crosser is now from the end line to the top of the 18 that they're attacking. So now we have a late cross, which is closer to the end line. And I think there was a time, actually, that I really appreciated this was I was doing this for a group of coaches at a U.S. United Soccer Coaches course somewhere. And we did it, and we were playing maybe like 10 or 15 minutes. I think the goalkeeper had only caught maybe two crosses. And somebody said to me, well, this isn't really that good. They've only caught two crosses. And they were right. They only caught two crosses. I said, well, how many decisions have they made? And the guy goes, I don't know, a lot. I'm going like, I'm okay then. Sure, I want them to catch crosses, and they want to catch crosses. That's fine. That's good. But they came and they dropped back, or they just, okay, nope. And then they communicated with their backs to drop the decision-making in that environment. Because sometimes there would be a ball. If there's nobody there, they're going to go and get that. But because there were three attackers there, their decision was correct. Don't go get it. Hold. And so I think the amount of decision-making that goes on in that kind of environment is really valuable. George, you're going to add something?
Well, no, I mean, the only thing that I was going to add is, which I left out, was in that functional, I would say, pattern play. You know, and again, this was when Jimmy Nielsen was the head coach, he kept the backs in, you know, he would just use two of them, but now there's obviously you're working with your defenders, you know, which to me is essential in regards to what you're talking about, Billy, the decisions, the decisions of, you know, calling your defenders off because you're calling keeper, or when you're calling away, that's signifying obviously, hey, I'm not going to get to the ball. So building that level of chemistry and trust with your backs is in that functional environment, whether it's that you're talking about the channel game, aren't you? Or a version of it.
Yeah. You get a cross on each side. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's also educational because the defenders are learning how far their goalkeeper comes. The goalkeeper is learning how far they can come, what's their range. And so they're learning how to play with each other. And that's important. We know that so-and-so is going to come and get this ball and so-and-so is not. And so they've learned that about them. And the goalkeepers also learn, like, well, so-and-so is not going to win that ball, so I'm going to. Mm-hmm. Those kind of experiences, I think, are beneficial.
I think cool. One thing that's cool. important is that for our coaches to communicate with their goalkeepers and understand is that when our goalkeepers are in an isolated environment, I say isolated meaning with their goalkeeping coach, their trainer, you know, that's where they're going to get repetition. They're going to get quality repetition. They're going to develop confidence. And then they have to find a way to transfer that into the goal mouth, where now on every 10 balls, they might only touch two. Obviously your points are great, George and Billy, that it's decision-making now. A ball gets hit, you have to make the decision. I'm not coming. I need to call it away. If you're going to go get it, then you're going to, you know, step and win it. If you have defenders, it's maybe there's a communication with your defenders that it's away, step, whatever that is. But in terms of repetition, the repetitions are going to be physical in terms of handling and touching. Repetitions are going to be done in that isolated environment.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'll throw before maybe we move on is, and again, only because, again, I was watching the ACC tournament as well. And I can't remember which game it was. It might've been Virginia Tech against Virginia. I think that was the matchup. But the ball, it was a cross. The goalkeeper was, I don't know, in anticipation, goalkeeper position, so it was, I don't know, 3 yards maybe off their line, which is fine. Yeah. When you're waiting for the cross, yeah. Okay. But they didn't go for it and they stayed there. And they, sure enough, they got beat by a floater over their head that if they were standing on the goal line, they could have jumped up and headed it away. So I think one of the things that I would, again, as I evolved as a coach, I just would, even if you're not getting that cross, what are you doing? Get back on your line. Don't stay, you know, if you're anticipating the ball and you're 3 yards off your line because that's where you want to position to win the cross, great. But if you don't go for the cross, if you don't win it, you have to drop, especially with women, with the female keepers. Very big on that because they're most vulnerable over their head. Right. And so it's like, no, get back. If you're not going to cross, fine. I'm okay with that. Just get back on your line. And so I think that would be an added point of emphasis for our coaches to remember when they're training their kids. George.
Well, I think what's great there is when you are in that goalkeeper training environment and obviously you're separated from the team, you can still make some of those, you create that situation where the defender or that player's on you. So now you are creating that uncomfortableness for the goalkeeper, but then you got to be able to translate that to the game. Or to your team, where it's just like, how are we going to deal with that? Are you going to handle it yourself? Are you going to drop another back in? Or are you okay, like, with that player being on you? And I think you need to make sure that you're addressing those things with your goalkeeper. You know, again, 5-10 on a good day. If I remember, I think I wanted as much as my you know, as much as I wanted that I was capable of moving my feet, and I felt like in space I can maneuver anywhere, I still wanted Brian Cribb to be there as a security blanket to take care of that guy. I'm not going to lie to you. You know what I mean? So with every goalkeeper, you got to create those you know, for instance, you know, Lotto talking about the sun, or one of you guys were talking about the sun in the wind. But what about that level of pressure? You know, Dartmouth, when I was at Yale, they would drop 3 guys on top of the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
How are you going to manage that? So anyways.
DWI, deal with it.
Billy, my last thing before we wrap up is, you guys have seen some of my rants that I have on text message when I start watching too many games when I get a chance, but I've had a string in the last 7 or 10 days where I have my, you know, field coaching lens on per se, and then I put my goalkeeping lens on. So I'll take these periods where I put my goalkeeping lens on, and I'll just say over the last sort of 10 days watching, and most, this is pretty predominantly collegiate soccer, Division 1, because it's really only people that are playing. Being really disappointed with far too many goalkeepers whose starting positions to me are absolutely baffling. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't know what the message is. If there is a message, some of them appears that there's no message. So it's, you know, that's just another topic for another day, but maybe something for coaches to go and watch when they watch games is look at starting positions. What do you like? What do you not like? And this is mostly from crossings, not from shooting. This is from wide positions or from crossing positions.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's a good idea for us. Okay. Well, good. Hopefully coaches, got something out of this. We hope that our conversation has been good. And other than that, I think, man, it's have a good day. Have a good Thanksgiving. All right.
All right. See you guys.
Cool. All right. See you.
Gentlemen, right. Take care.
All right.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.